Chapter 23. Shinri 4. Painted faces stared at Shinri. She'd forgotten how disturbing that could be. She really had grown accustomed to life in Alethkar's court. Once she had joyed in the discomfort those faces had given visiting noblemen. Her younger self would have been horrified to see the woman she had become. The city of Kenadol, capital of the island kingdom of Thalina, had become foreign to her once again, yet it still held a fascination for her. Shinri strolled through the city streets, her feet given a roaming freedom that was growing depressingly rare lately. For the moment, however, there was nowhere specific she had to be. No plot of Jasnah's to further, no ceremony she needed attend, no function that demanded her peripheral attention. She could simply stroll, looking at the pictures. The Thalans were fascinated with eyes and faces, and often exaggerated them in their murals and paintings, art forms of which they were extremely fond. Shinri barely passed a building, whether it be shop, government structure, or simple dwelling, that didn't bear at least an amateur painting on one side. Most were far from amateur. Just like Aleths liked to decorate their doors with portal glyphs and carvings, the Thalans used murals and paintings as a representation of wealth and status. The more powerful a man was, or the more rich a shop's goods, the better his painting. They were especially fond of faces. Eyes peeked from overhangs and ledges, faces were emblazoned on building sides, and massive crowd scenes ran across the larger structures. Lady Jasnah's history lessons had taught Shinri things that once, as a child and young adolescent, she had stubbornly ignored. Even though Thalina seemed more normal than Shinivar, it wasn't truly a Kanaran kingdom. Its people were of Inavan's stock, the only ones left, now that Inava itself had been destroyed. They weren't pagans, though they had once been. Thalina had joined with the Kanaran kingdoms in their worship of the Almighty when Joson, dubbed the Vorin King, had converted in the Fifth Epoch. Shinri reached up, brushing her fingers along a mural. Aleths preferred indistinct artistic representations, favoring form over detail, even in most sculptures. Heralds were represented as faceless warriors of divinity, and human representations rarely included more than perfunctory faces. To the Vorins, stylized pal glyphs were the only regal form of visual art, and even those were often considered secondary to poetic or musical pieces. It seemed so strange to see detail in the faces again. But it was a good sense of strangeness. The paintings, mixed with the unfamiliar Thalan architecture, made the street seem slightly off, imperfect, real. It was an alien realness, true, but it left her refreshingly calm. She felt no impulse to gather pebbles or pull at the threads of her dress, no need to mar the images she saw around her by prying free mural tiles. It was a freedom she hadn't felt since her return from Prala. Thalina was already flawed, and that was good. It was honest. So, for the moment, Shinri simply walked and enjoyed the peace. Or at least, she tried to. As she strolled, she was amused to find a slight sense of urgency within her, a desire to return to Alethkar. Things were moving so quickly. Jasnah's betrothal would be announced this very evening, and the queen still hadn't revealed which of the many potential suitors she intended to choose. Events in Shinri's homeland of Yakaved were coming to a head. The dramatic death of the puppeteer, followed by her cousin's subjugation of House Rinar, providing unexpected twists in the dynastic upheaval. There was a thrill in all of this. She had tasted power during her visit to Vaden City, and it had awakened an understanding within her. Even as Jasnah's underling, she was at the center of movements that shaped nations, much as the high storms shaped the land. And this was the duality within her. At times, Shinri was reminded of how much she disliked noble society for its falseness. The convolutions of etiquette and courtly intrigue sickened her. Yet at the same time, she felt an attraction to their puzzles and struggle for power. She moved among them with skill, enjoying the application of things Jasnah had taught. She was a child of the very society her sensibilities denounced. "Maybe that's why I'm so twisted," she thought wryly, holding up the sleeve of her tala and glancing at a place where she had pulled free the silvery embroidery. The red dress was pocked by tiny sewing holes, scarred patterns showing where the embroidery had once trailed. She knew that the chambermaids were talking of her again. They constantly had to take her dresses to the tailors for restitching, wash hidden brush pen scrawlings off the stone walls, and take her furniture in for refinishing to obscure the marks Shinri cut into the wood. Maybe it wasn't simply a reaction to the court's lying perfection. Maybe it was a manifestation of her indecision. She was the one who lied, trying to pretend she belonged to the court, yet trying to remain above it at the same time. "And now you go further," she thought. It had taken weeks for her to find time to come to Thelena to search for Tethryn's convoy in the dock registers. She should have come sooner, for discovering the truth about the death of the man she had loved was not a thing to be delayed. Yet the maneuverings in Alethkar were so demanding. Jasnah needed Shinri's help and support. In a way, the entire kingdom did, for Jasnah's task was the preservation of its monarch. Tethryn was distant. It had been so long since Shinri had seen him last, 8 months now, and that had only been a quick visit between stages of the Prahlan War. It had been 2 years since they had really spent any time together. 2 years, during which she had grown from 15 to 17. It seemed like so little in the measure of epochs, but when she thought of the barely civil child she had been and compared her to the woman she had become, "You must do this," she thought. "You must know what happened to him, if only to resolve that section of your life. Everyone has forgotten Tethryn amidst the groanings of kingdoms and armies, but not you. This is something you must do, no matter how uncertain you are of your abilities." And, unfortunately, uncertain was an understatement of the problem. Gathering information from dock keepers was not like doing the same with Kanaran noblewomen. The men she had asked so far had been unhelpful at best. She'd wanted to bring Kemnar. That had been a large part of her procrastination about coming to Thelena. In the end, she had failed. Jasnah simply needed the man too much. He appeared to report his findings, but he always disappeared back into the Ral Aram underground, searching for clues about the group of assassins that sought King Elokar's life. That left Shinri on her own. Without Kemnar's skill, it quickly became obvious that the information she sought wouldn't be given to her by common workers. A Kanaran noblewoman dressed in fine silks was never going to gain their trust. Such was the reason, conscious or unconscious, that her feet led her to the Thelen Palace. It was an ancient building, lined with statues on its step-like sides. The heralds were represented, of course, as were Thelen kings and heroes. Notably included, however, were the seven conquerors. There was even a statue dedicated to Jarna, the very man Dalinar Kholin had killed just 2 decades before. The addition of the seven conquerors amongst the heroes and kings was odd. Jarna, for instance, had conquered Thelena itself before moving northward to Vaidenar and finally stopping at Alethkar. Yet as she studied the statues, Shinri thought she understood why they were there. The seven men were figures of lore. They were the seven leaders who had tried and failed to unite all of Roshar under one throne. Even in Alethkar, there were numerous ballads and stories about them. Shinri turned from contemplating the statues to instead study the steps that lay before her. They were cut for a masculine stride, not for a Kanara noblewoman in a tala. Of course, most Aleth women wouldn't have left their bearers and attendants back in Alethkar so they could wander the streets aimlessly like a deranged madwoman. Shinri sighed and began climbing, a slow, annoying process in the form-fitting dress. She eventually reached the top and paused by a pillar to consider her next course of action. King Amalin had been kind to her as a child, though she couldn't understand why he had suffered such an unruly girl. She had avoided Thelena during the last few years, as she had come to be ashamed of just how rude she had been to its noblemen and teachers. Now, however, she needed the king's aid. She would simply have to count on Amalin's patience. Perhaps he would look upon her long overdue apology with enough favor to grant her access to official dock ledgers. Shinri glanced up from her reflections. A guard at the front gate had turned and was regarding her with a curious look. He ducked into the building, then returned a brief second later with a robed stormkeeper. The scholar paused for a moment, then rushed forward hurriedly.
"Lady Shinri Davar?" he asked,
speaking the Vaden tongue with the staccato accent of a Thalen. "Yes?" Shinri asked, hesitantly. The man laughed.
"By the heralds themselves," he said with amusement. "Well, I suppose Sen Crenchan did say, when looking for a lost gem, search your pockets first. We have half the palace guard wandering the city looking for you, child, and now you show up on the palace steps."
Shinri paused. "The king is looking for me?"
"Of course," the stormkeeper said, waving her forward. "When visiting a foreign kingdom, child, a lady of your rank might consider paying respects to the local king. It makes for good courtesy, you know. When His Majesty heard you had come through the Oath Gate, then simply disappeared into the city without attendance and without leaving a message for him, he was most disturbed."
"Great," Shinri thought sickly. She put on her Yasna face, however, smiling. "You must take me to His Majesty immediately, then, so I can apologize for my grievous oversight."
"That's what I'm trying to do, child," the man said, gesturing toward an approaching litter. "His Majesty had hoped to meet with you before his appointment at the new house. When it became obvious that locating you would prove difficult, however, he departed and left instructions for you to be brought to him at the earliest possible convenience."
Shinri nodded, allowing herself to be led to the litter, then carried through the richer section of the city toward the new house. The structure looked something like a palace itself. Built after Thalen architectural ideals, it was more rounded than angular, with broad domes and plenty of wall space for murals. Once they arrived, Shinri asked her bearers to put her down, a command they followed with obvious reluctance. "Yes, I know," she thought, climbing out of the litter. "Women are far too precious to be allowed to walk about on their own. The winds help us. What if I should trip and fall?" She followed her guide into the building and was confronted by memories. The hallways of the new house contained even more pictures than the city streets. Not a flat surface was wasted. The floors bore tile murals, the walls grand reliefs or paintings. Here, where high storms and Crom were not a worry, the detail could be even more fantastic than it was on the outside. However,
It wasn't the beauty itself that caused Shinri to pause, but that beauty's familiarity. She wouldn't have thought that the new house would have had such an effect on her. The building had been her home for barely a year, just before her wardship began. Yet she remembered the busy hallways, cluttered with robed stormkeepers. She remembered the quiet study rooms, their meditations broken only by her occasional spoiled remark. She remembered tutors both kindly and distracted, scholars whose studies were their passion, and who had varying patience for the temperamental child who had been placed in their care. "Lady Shinri?" her guide asked. "Shall I call for the litter?"
"No," Shinri said, hurrying forward with a blush. "Lead on."
She composed her demeanor as her guide conferred quietly with a younger man waiting by the inner doors, asking after the king's location. He then led her from the main hallway. The new house was arranged in the form of expanding rectangular hallways with rooms in between. It didn't take long for her guide to lead her to one of the outer hallways, where Shinri found a familiar figure standing in conference with a couple of robed scholars. King Amalyn was a tall man, young enough to be handsome, old enough to be distinguished. Despite the Thalen noble line's millennia-long tradition of mixing with the Kanaran houses, Amalyn still betrayed classical Inavan features. A round face, with a short, subdued nose and chin, but predominant ears and brows. The king said something to his companions, and several left, leaving only one behind, a middle-aged stormkeeper in rich, high-ranking robes. Shinri's guide bid her wait, then scurried forward to announce her. Shinri stood quietly as Amalyn looked over with surprise. The hallway fell silent, and Shinri steeled herself for royal displeasure.
"Your Majesty," Shinri finally said, speaking in Thalen as she bowed. "Lord Keeper," she added, nodding respectfully to the king's companion.
The king smiled.
"Little Shinri," he exclaimed, waving her forward. "About time they found you."
Shinri wrestled down a blush.
"I apologize for inconveniencing you so by my thoughtless lack of respect, Your Majesty," she said, walking forward with her eyes respectfully lowered. "I should have announced myself to your staff immediately upon my arrival, so that I could present myself as befitting etiquette."
The king paused, cocking his head. Then he laughed loudly.
"By the winds! Such propriety! It appears that Lady Yasna has ruined you, as I worried she might."
"She has made a lady of me, Your Majesty," Shinri replied.
Amalyn raised an eyebrow.
"A lady?" he laughed. "Well, there are worse things to be, I suppose. Still, I can't help but remember the fiery little girl who stalked my hallways and threw books at my stormkeepers. She had such passion."
"There are other ways to channel passion, Your Majesty," Shinri said. "Ones that don't involve giving the royal tutors a concussion."
Amalyn smiled.
"Oh, I didn't worry about that too much. Reports said your aim was terrible."
"I was 12, Shinri said. "And those tomes were heavy. I still can't believe that..."
She trailed off, flushing slightly.
"I do apologize for those days, Your Majesty. I was a foolish child who hadn't yet learned the service others were striving to do her."
Amalyn waved away her apology with a gesture.
"Here, Shinri. You remember Keeper Devi, don't you?"
Shinri paused, studying the hefty scholar.
"Should I, Your Majesty?"
"You should, Shinri," the stormkeeper replied. "I dodged a fair number of the aforementioned heavy tomes."
Shinri cocked her head, trying to place the voice.
"Arrowneck Rachal?"
she thought with sudden surprise, finally deciphering his features. By the winds! Last time I saw you, you were almost thin enough to be knocked down by a winter high storm.
Lord Keeper, you've, filled out.
Young ladies fill out, Shinri, the Stormkeeper replied with a chuckle. I've just become fat. His Majesty is to blame. I was never meant for administration.
Amelin didn't respond to the jibe. He just smiled, nodding to an attendant.
Send for Zezric, if you would, he requested. Tell him we've located the Lady Shinri.
The attendant nodded, dashing off. Shinri stood uncomfortably, wondering at events. Amelin still seemed to retain a fondness for her. Perhaps her petition would not go unheeded. However, this was not Vaidenar, and it was not polite to discuss politics so early in a conversation. So, she turned to lighter topics.
How is the new house doing, Your Majesty? She asked respectfully.
Oh, it gets along. Perhaps too well, Amelin said, waving for her to walk beside him as he began to stroll down the hallway. The local first monks would have me believe my soul is in question for competing with the monasteries for noble students.
Shinri nodded as they passed classrooms and libraries. The hallways of the new house scuttled with stormkeepers, all of whom bowed to the king when they passed. Shinri remembered his periodic inspections from her training days. Amelin believed strongly in the school his ancestors had created, patterned after the legendary House of Truths, and took personal interest in its development. The building was open to all, a place of deep learning and scholarship, like a monastery without the Voronism. Here, where Kanaran ideals mixed with Inavan tradition, theistic values were weaker. Many even thought them perverted. However, there were some, such as Lady Yasna, who preferred the more secular learning the new house provided.
Tell me, Shinri, the king said. Has your father forgiven me yet?
Shinri blushed again.
He has not changed his mind, Your Majesty.
He must be rather impressed with your development lately, Amelin noted. He finally has an ideal courtly daughter.
Hardly ideal, Shinri mumbled. Not like
Yasna Kurlin? Amelin asked. She studied here, you know. Do you remember her, Devi?
The portly stormkeeper nodded.
Of course, Your Majesty. She was
perfect,
Shinri asked.
Competent,
Devi corrected.
Too competent. Yasna Kurlin couldn't just attend a class. She had to dominate it. Most of the other students hated her. A few loved her, but hateful or loving, she controlled them all.
Interesting, Shinri thought. Of course she could imagine Yasna in such a situation. A lady is always in control, Shinri said out loud, quoting one of Yasna's favorite teaching phrases.
Amelin snorted quietly.
I think you'll find, child, that Lady Yasna's control will serve her little over the years. In the end, when she finds herself alone, perhaps she will realize that some things were never meant to be manipulated, if you'll excuse me.
Shinri nodded, surprised at the bitterness in the king's words. It was not uncommon to find someone who spoke of Yasna in such a manner, but she hadn't expected to hear the tone in King Amelin's voice. Senses trained by the very woman he had just disparaged tingled at the oddity.
Why does he say such things about Lady Kurlin?
Shinri asked the no longer arrow-necked man at her side.
Devi sighed, watching his king.
Amelin is younger than he looks, child. His father was still alive when Lady Kurlin attended the new house nearly 20 years before. He had plenty of opportunity to interact with your lady.
I see, Shinri said. Another one? How many hearts have you broken, Jasna?
Do not let the king's history with Lady Colin weaken the import of his words, young Shinri, the scholar suggested. King Amelin is a wise man. It is difficult to love or be loved when your thoughts are focused only on manipulation, even if you sincerely seek to help through your efforts. Remember that as you join the court.
Little worry there, Shinri thought. I think if you knew the truth, you'd find me not so corrupted by Jasna as your king implied. At least, Jasna seems to think I've still a ways to go.
Inside the room, the stormkeepers had set down tomes and approached their king. Newly inducted acolytes and grizzled sages both looked excited as they explained their research to their liege. Amelin smiled as if interested. Several monks stood obligingly in the corner, probably to be used as readers. Shinri frowned at the sight of the monks. They hadn't been there when she attended the new house. Most stormkeepers ignored even the pretense of tradition, giving little thought to the customs that said men should not read. Thelena might have become Vorin in religion, but it was still separated from the mainland by a great distance. The island kingdom maintained its own perspective on rules and traditions.
The monks are new, Shinri said.
Devi smiled.
His Majesty invited them, even pays them, as a means of smoothing tempers. Do not let his humility fool you. The new house is doing well. Very well. It is Thalena's primary source of income. Now that the opal mines have failed, our stormkeepers are respected across the three peninsulas. You won't find a major nobleman anywhere in Kanar who doesn't employ one. Students come from every civilized nation to learn from us. We may not be the House of Truths, but we are the closest thing the world has in these times.
Shinri nodded, smiling slightly, as familiar memories returned again. She could almost pretend that she was here to learn from the Stormkeepers again. Perhaps it had been the opportunity to get away from her father. Or perhaps, deep within, she really had enjoyed learning. Either way, as she thought back, she remembered her days in the new house with great fondness. She had actually cried when her father arrived to take her away, explaining that there was a new treaty with Alethkar, a treaty that gave a princess of one house to be the future queen, and a daughter of another to be a ward of the king's sister.
The king appears to be enjoying himself, a new voice said.
Shinri turned curiously at the voice. She hadn't realized that someone had approached. The form standing behind wore a black robe.
An awakener.
Shinri yelped slightly despite herself, backing away. The awakener looked at her with an amused expression, regarding her with his inhuman eyes. They were unnatural eyes, without iris, pupil, or whites, only red. A deep, glistening red. His skin was deeply flushed as well, and the air around him rippled in a slight halo, yet there was no heat coming off his body.
Who is this nervous child? The awakener asked, turning toward Devi. Lady Shinri, of the Devar House. The Stormkeeper explained. The king mentioned her to you, I believe.
The awakener turned back toward her, and Shinri shivered.
I see.
He held up his hand, and Shinri could see for the first time that he held a large ruby in his hand, a hand with blood-red nails. The ruby began to glow. Shinri shied back as the crystal burst to light, floating out of the awakener's hand, spinning in the air, and throwing shards of bright red light across the hallway.
Tell me, child, the awakener said, taking a step forward, ruby floating before him. What do you feel? What do you hear when you touch one of the pole stones? The music? Does it come to you? Do they call to you?
Shinri paled, glancing at Devai. The rotund stormkeeper did nothing to stop the creature. The hair on her arms rose and she began to shake. The awakener couldn't do anything to her. She'd undergone the Charon. She was safe. But she looked at the thing that was no longer human. Awakeners lived for hundreds of years, and their art changed them, each one in a different way. They didn't think like men, for they were no longer men. And as something other than men, perhaps the rules of men did not apply to them. The ruby glistened. The creature stepped forward. Shinri's heart jumped, terror rising. I have to go. Go somewhere. Run away. The air around her seemed to darken slightly, as if the creature were sucking away the light, and Shinri felt a longing. Longing. It was a strange and confusing emotion to fight with her fear. She wanted something. She was missing something. But what she needed, or why she should think that she needed it, was a complete mystery.
Zezrek, that is enough, the king said.
He stood in the doorway, having finished his conference with the scholars inside. The awakener bowed slightly, his gemstone growing dark and falling back into his hand. He stroked it idly with his thumb, unnatural eyes watching Shinri as the king approached, laying a hand on Shinri's shoulder and turning her away.
Don't mind Zezrek, the king said affably. He's harmless, a little strange, but awakeners all get that way eventually. He served my family faithfully for 3 centuries.
Shinri glanced behind. The awakener had turned from her and was speaking to Devai. The two followed behind as the king started walking down the hallway again. Why, Shinri began. Why do you let them?
You think we should set the awakeners apart? Like you do on the mainland?
Amalyn asked.
Sequester them? My father didn't think that was fair, considering what they do for us, and I tend to agree with him.
They don't seem to mind being separated, Shinri said.
They don't seem to mind being free, either,
Amalyn replied.
Anyway, it is of little matter. I'm more interested in why, after 3 years away, you finally decided to return to Thelena, and why you didn't see fit to even send word to the palace.
Shinri blushed.
I apologize again, Your Majesty, she said. How much to tell him? What will I give away if he finds out I'm suspicious of Tethryn's death?
The answer was simple. She couldn't give away anything, since she didn't really know anything.
I didn't think to contact you, because I was distracted by other events. You may have heard that I was engaged to Tethryn Rinar.
The king nodded.
Part of the same treaty that stole you away from us, I recall. I do mourn your loss at his death, child. I don't know if you were close to the prince or not, but I knew something of the lad. He was a good and honest man.
It is a shame that he should die so tragically while traveling here, to Thelena itself, Shinri noted. The king paused slightly, eyeing her. So it begins, Shinri thought. You play the game after all, Amalyn. You may be fond of the child your school once trained, but fondness and politics are completely separate things.
Indeed, Amalyn finally said. I didn't even know that he was coming until word of his death arrived at the palace.
Really?
Shinri asked, studying his face covertly, looking for signs that the king was lying. He was good at hiding his emotions, for a man.
Some people I've spoken to were under the impression that Prince Tethryn was coming specifically to engage in a deal with you, Your Majesty.
Amelin snorted. You speak of the rumor that he was going to sell me an awakener? Tell me, Shinri. You've just seen that I value the freedom even of those who don't value it themselves. How likely do you think I would be to break Shenaris by paying money to own another man?
Shinri shrugged. If you thought you were bringing him to freedom, perhaps?
No, Amelin replied. A man's reputation is his life, Shinri. Especially when dealing with you Kanarans. Even freeing an awakener wouldn't be worth the chance of the Aleth and Vaden noblemen thinking me an oathbreaker. If they were to stop employing our stormkeepers...
He was probably telling the truth. Amelin could bend religious traditions or gender roles, but no man could deny the way of kings and survive. It would be political suicide, especially considering Alethkar's rising political strength.
I must admit, then, Shinri said carefully. I am confused. Tethryn was a careful planner, Your Majesty. I find it difficult to believe that he would let his entire convoy be caught in a powerful high storm, no matter what the circumstances. You wouldn't know what trade goods he was transporting, would you? What would be so important to him that he would press on instead of returning for shelter?
The dock register said he was bringing a simple shipment of ceramics from the Lahanran mud shores, Amelin replied.
Ah, so you have researched this, Shinri thought with satisfaction. But what is it you aren't telling me, my dear King Amelin? The cover-up was obvious in his eyes and his posture. He was nervous about something, though he kept it in check. Time to bargain.
It seems that these are difficult times, no matter where one travels, she said.
Indeed, Amelin replied. At least the high storms are somewhat predictable, far more so than the hearts of men. One never can tell when one's trusted ally might become a foe. He might even come to wish your death.
Ah, so you've heard of the assassination plot.
And he obviously wanted to hear more. Unfortunately, there was little she could offer him in good conscience. The danger to Yasna's brother was far too pressing.
I'm afraid I know little of such things, Shinri said. I've been watching Yakaved lately. My family is, of course, my foremost concern.
Amelin eyed her.
I doubt you can have maintained much familiarity with them, though, seeing as how you've lived in Alethkar for the last 3 years.
True, she thought. So he doesn't want to hear about the Vaden dynasty change. Or at least, he's correctly guessed that I don't have much to offer beyond speculation.
You are correct, Shinri admitted. I have been away from the Three Houses for too long. However, the truth is that I spent as much of it in Prala as in Alethkar. The war itself proved very interesting, especially in its final days.
Amelin paused. I am a bit curious about that, he admitted. I heard some interesting rumors. Something about the death of the traitor and the Pralir king?
Shinri smiled. Bait taken. Now she just had to hope what she offered was worth whatever it was he hid.
It happened during a high storm, she explained. The king was on the battlefield, fighting toward a decoy tower. The traitor led a surprise force in a flanking maneuver, sneaking toward the back of our army, probably to attack our command towers, or even our camp itself.
A cowardly move, Amelin noted.
True, Shinri said. But so was murdering his own king, then fleeing to Prala to hide. One of our scouts noticed the approaching force, and we sent an intercepting army. However, the man who sent the intercepting force did not wait for proper estimates of troop strength or location. He ended up sending 5,000 men to face a force 20,000 strong. When the high storm passed, King Elokar led a larger force to intercept. However, he found both armies, the traitor's force and the smaller Aleth contingent, dead.
Curious, Amelin said with a troubled look. They fought during the high storm?
Apparently, Shinri said. But later analysis led Lord Dalinar to believe that there was a third force involved, one that killed both groups of men under the cover of the storm, then left the bodies as if they had killed each other. This caused Amelin to frown openly.
That is very strange, he said.
Lord Dalinar thinks the third force came up from distant Prahl, Shinri explained. The wild lands there are just a short distance away, and there are numerous malcontents there who were unhappy with Prelir and its king.
But why kill the Aleth force, too? Amelin asked. It seems very unusual.
It has given Lord Dalinar a great deal of worry, Shinri agreed. He is seeking information about who could have raised an army large enough to defeat over 20,000 soldiers in the space of a high storm's passing. He thinks it might be a group known as the Ranta, a collection of former Prelir noblemen who were ousted during the conflicts a decade back. I'm afraid I know little more than that. Amelin nodded thoughtfully. Then he studied Shinri again, his eyes betraying a measure of respect. Even considering her changes in behavior, he obviously hadn't expected to find a political adept in the place of the outrageous child he had known.
You're very observant, he noted. Lady Yasna trained you well.
Thank you, Your Majesty, Shinri said. Of course, she also trained me to expect those treated with kindness to respond in turn.
You're already better than she is, Amelin said with a chuckle. That's always been her problem, Shinri. She can't laugh about these things. Even slightly, everything is so serious to her. The mighty, stoic, unyielding Lady Yasna Kulin. Sometimes a man doesn't want strength. He just wants a smile.
I saw her smile once, Shinri noted. At least, I think I did. It might have been a nervous twitch. Or perhaps she was just stifling a sneeze. Amelin laughed deeply, shaking his head.
That woman! I certainly hope that her future husband is a man of sturdy patience. The betrothal is to be announced this evening, is it not?
Yes, Shinri said. At the dueling competition. Amelin nodded. He took a breath, sobering slightly.
All right, on with the response in turn, then. You're right to suspect Tethryn's death, child. However, I think you're seeking answers to the wrong questions. The cargo of that convoy is irrelevant. Rather than asking what the ships were carrying, you should be asking what they weren't.
What they weren't carrying? Shinri repeated. What do you mean?
Your Prince Tethryn wasn't aboard any of those ships, Amelin said quietly.
Shinri paused in the hallway, stunned. Stupid! You didn't even consider that! What of Yasna's training now? How could you miss something so obvious?
The Renars threw that convoy together with such speed that it was obvious they were trying to hide something, Amelin explained. I was fortunate to have a very clever spy in the port they chose to depart from, and he got himself on board one of the convoy vessels. Shinri. They sunk that ship themselves. They sailed out, knowing ahead of time that they would get caught in the storm. They tried to make it look as realistic as possible, so the sailors would spread the rumor they wanted. But my spy went out during the storm itself. The Renars scuttled their own ship, leaving it to sink in the storm.
Scuttled their own ship? They wanted it to look like Tethryn was dead, she said. But why? So they could use him as a spy somehow?
Amelin shook his head.
House Renar is convinced he is dead, he said. The sinking of the ship was to cover something else. Something about the way he died, though I can't figure out what. They needed a convenient excuse for a prince of one of the three houses to just suddenly disappear.
A sickness would have been far less suspicious, Shinri said. Why use such a contrived method?
They would have been expected to display a body if he'd died of a sickness,
Amelin pointed out.
True, Shinri said. But even still, I came seeking answers, Your Majesty. But what you've given me only makes me more curious.
Amelin paused, shooting a look behind to where his attendants stood with the Awakener and Head Stormkeeper. He turned back to her.
This is a difficult subject, Shinri. I don't know what happened to Tethryn, but the Renar are determined to keep it secret. You might not want to push too hard on this one. I doubt the reward is going to be worth the cost.
Perhaps, Shinri said skeptically.
Amelin shook his head.
The Renar sinking their own ships? The Devar rising up to take the Vaedan throne? Aleth Parshan hiring assassins to kill their own king? Times have grown uncertain, Shinri. I don't trust the world anymore. Not beyond my own shores. I'm going to try to keep Thelena secure during the days to follow. You are welcome here, if you wish to remain.
Shinri paused.
I don't understand, Your Majesty.
Refuge, Shinri,
Amelin said quietly. It will be a difficult thing to find in the near future, I think. Why don't you stay in Thelena for a while? I'll send a message to Lady Colin. Your period of wardship has to be nearing an end, and she is going to be wedded in a few days. She will be too busy to see to your training. Perhaps she'll let you stay here, receive some of the teachings at the new house that you once avoided.
Refuge.
But what he offered was more politics. Did he ask out of concern for her? Or out of desire to have leverage against both Lady Yasna and Lord Talshech Davar?
No, she told herself. You can trust this man.
But she couldn't stay, anyway.
Not now, Your Majesty, she said, shaking her head. Lady Yasna needs me too much right now. Besides, I need to know what happened to Tethryn. He wasn't on the ship. Your spies say that the Renars think him dead. But what if... It was a frightening thought. She'd loved him once, as a child. What would she think of him now? Besides, she said out loud, I think you may be overreacting. The issue with Jezenrosh is dangerous, perhaps, but it will soon be resolved. There may be conflict ahead, but it will be nothing compared to what we already endured in Prala. Alethkar won that war with ease. It can overcome a few internal squabbles.
Ah, child, the king replied. The Prala war was but a breeze to the high storm that is coming, and most houses aren't ready for it. Their glyph wards aren't out, and their windows are open. Destruction will come with the winds.
Shinri frowned, looking up at the kindly man who had welcomed her as a child and would now do the same for her again. How could she explain? If there was a storm coming, then Shinri needed to spend it at Yasna's side.
Yasna frustrated her.
Others saw the woman as heartless, and at times Shinri agreed.
Yasna was never complimentary, ever critical, and always manipulative.
But Yasna was the only one who had been able to take the child Shinri and give her the gifts of propriety and education. Only a will that powerful, a temperament that unprovocable, had been strong enough to make Shinri change. After the death of Shinri's mother, so long before. The truth was, Yasna was really all she had, all she had ever had.
I must go back, she said.
The king sighed, standing.
Very well, he said. Just watch yourself, once little Shinri. Dangerous times are approaching. Our oath gate may not be open in the coming months, but if you can find your way here, I will provide what safety I can.
Thank you, Your Majesty.
Amelin stood, watching the young girl leave down the hallway, heading for the oath gate. He shook his head. It was already beginning. First Vaidenar with the War of the Houses, and soon Alethkar. The world was changing. He turned to his companions.
Well?
Red-eyed Zezrik shook his head.
She is no awakener. She sensed nothing of the melody, and she wears her jewelry without regard, without love.
Amelin nodded. That had been his last guess, though it had been a far-fetched one. Still,
perhaps not an awakener, but she's of the right age and of one of the right lines.
So are a lot of people, Devi said. We tested her when she was here 4 years ago, Your Majesty. There is nothing unusual about the child.
Yes, Amelin said. But so much had been lost with the fall of the House of Truths, and there were things for which they knew no tests. Very well. What of her purpose here in Thelena? Do you think she was spying for Yasna or for her cousin Tashech Devar?
Hard to say, Your Majesty, Devi said. Did she give any hints to you?
Amelin shook his head.
She covered herself well. She implied she was here to investigate the death of Prince Tethryn of House Rhaenar. It is a good story, perhaps even the truth. She was engaged to the man, after all.
A political betrothal, Devi said, made when she was just 14. She came through the oath gate furtively, without announcement or notice to you, then entered the city without attendants or litter bearers. That is very suspicious behavior. Do you think the Aleth might suspect what we do?
Amelin shook his head.
I don't know, he admitted. There might be a few onyx seers in Yakaved, but Alethkar? We have heard nothing.
Which could mean that their security is even greater than our own.
A frightening thought.
Come, Amelin said. We have preparations to make.